Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, so do we start the program with a digression today?
Oh, yes, we do.
At least Eric Scalavino thinks so. I don't know. What do you think, Kevin? Should we start with a little digression?
I second that.
You second the motion? All in favor say aye. Mm-hmm. Well, we're digressing because my girlfriend, Robin, and she listens to the show. So, Robin, if you're listening right now, the cranberry bread is an absolute smash
hit, gone, home run.
It was devoured in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, there's a little bit left that I'm not going to guarantee it'll be here by 3 o'clock.
Oh, no, it's gone. It's long gone.
By a bunch of cavemen.
But, yeah. It's
how about Fred
tremendous.
Coming and finding it and just ripping a hunk of it off? That was
just
great. Huh?
Unwraps it, no fork, no knife, no
hands,
plate, no napkin,
just
to soil it for everybody else.
Literally a fistful of cake.
It really did.
Flying everywhere, all over the floor back here.
Landing on his shirt, where all the other food usually lands.
And poor Kevin. He's like, hey, I got to work here. What are you doing?
He had some stuck in his chest hair, too, that I'll save for later. You know, some bits come back for later.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, sweetheart, the cranberry bread is a complete success.
Oh, absolutely.
That's all I can tell you. All right, welcome into the program. And you know, maybe, Kevin, if we have to keep giving away yearbooks, we'll start giving away cranberry breads.
Oh, yeah, you got some this
Loaves
week.
Of bread.
How about
got some winners.
Five of them?
Five winners.
I was number six. In fact, I was the first because I nailed the score this week, right?
Yeah.
So, nailed the score and five others.
There they are.
Yep. He's got all the yearbooks
right there.
He's got them right there. He's got ready to mail. And by some chance, if you did get the correct score and we pretty much know who you are, you need to send us, send Kevin an email. We'll say it one more time in case you missed the podcast yesterday.
We've got three of them so far.
Three of them. All right. So we're waiting on two and you've got basically to the end of the week here. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address, put in the subject line, contest winner, and, we'll verify your correct entry of 27-17 from last week.
Just
and
so you know.
We'll send it.
We've got David and in New York, in Brooklyn, New York.
Yep.
We've got Ray in Kane, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And Rashad in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay,
so
there are still two more that we're waiting on. By my estimation, there were two others, not counting me. So we hit the mother load. We've been doing this for 2 years.
What a way
to not get one, and then we get five in 1 week.
What a way to break out of the slump, huh?
I know. Shocking, huh?
Yeah.
Shocking. So we had five people correctly go 27-17.
Good job to everybody.
It was an excellent job by everybody. It, so much so that I don't think we can afford to take another hit like that. So like I said, Robin, you may have to start baking cranberry breads. So, you know, we'll try to give those away. Anyway, we're happy to do it. The contest will be back on again this week. We'll take your predictions tomorrow here in the playbook. In the meantime, yesterday's program, which of course you were off yesterday, but you know that there was some news.
A little bit.
That we made right up on the trading deadline, mm-hmm. and Kevin was doing his due diligence. We stayed on top of all of the social network feeds.
Yep.
Right up to the moment of the trade deadline ended at 4 o'clock Eastern time, and sure enough, about 10 minutes. What was it, Kevin? 10, 12, 13 minutes before the trade deadline,
we got
the word about Isaac Sopoaga.
Yep.
And so he's now a Patriot, and the Patriots sent the release out officially on the trade earlier today.
Yesterday.
Or actually, late last night.
Yeah.
Late last night. I had it in my email inbox today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, correct. So, what are your thoughts, at least your initial thoughts on the move?
Well, it was certainly an area that they needed some help. And, not surprising that they went there. I mean, I have to do a little more homework on the player himself, but he's been around in the NFL for so long, and there has to be a reason for that. I like the move. They attacked, and it's kind of like last year. They attacked an area of need on defense. You know, hopefully he can have the type of, pay the type of dividends that Tlaib did right away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what, I don't know really what he can do on the field. He's mostly been a nose, or a three technique in his career. I know that much about him, but, hopefully he can have, an impact on helping the running game in particular, because they've really suffered in that area, John, since Wilfork and Kelly have both been out.
Right.
So, you know, the youngsters, Villano, Forston, Jones, the other Jones, Chris Jones, they've had their moments. They haven't been horrible, but they've certainly been a lot more vulnerable to the run. So hopefully Soapy, as I've taken to calling him.
Oh,
already,
boy, here we go.
Can
I don't know, does he really want that nickname?
I'm sure he's probably had it for a long time anyway.
Okay.
We'll find out, though.
Yeah, I guess we will. He, you know, clearly he's one of those guys, though. I think, I'll be honest with you, when we first saw the name and everything pop up yesterday, it was kind of like, all right, I know who this guy is, but I'm not sure who he is.
Can't place him. Yeah.
So it's been tough to place him because he's sort of been under the radar. I mean, I don't think he's been a dominant player by any stretch.
No,
but he did, you know, obviously play well enough in Philadelphia's eyes to warrant a 3-year, $12 million deal in the offseason.
And it was kind of like Tommy Kelly's signing in the offseason. A guy that you've kind of heard of, but wasn't someone that stood out as like, oh, God, we got to go get Tommy Kelly. You know, he only really stood out because Belichick has often said nice things about Tommy Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously had an immediate impact, and he's been great since when he's been healthy here. So hopefully Sopoaga can do the same type of thing. I mean, yeah, obviously Philadelphia. But I wonder, though, what went wrong?
What caused Philadelphia
to
give up on him so early in the process?
Now, was that contract given to him while Chip Kelly was there? Because I wonder if that has anything to do with, you know, maybe he felt like this wasn't.
I guess we'd really have to go back and look at when he signed. He signed the deal in March, so I would say.
So Kelly had to have been there by then.
Kelly was there by then.
Yeah.
Because Kelly.
I mean, those moves are all made. Like,
yeah,
right after,
yeah. Wasn't he there? Didn't
probably
I know that
in January.
There was some back and forth after the football season was over, but I think he was in place by the time Sopoaga signed his contract in March.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm pretty sure he was.
So, but maybe there's something to that. Maybe the front office wanted to do it, and Kelly had just gotten there. You know what I mean? Maybe he finally convinced them to be.
I find it unusual
that
they were willing to sign him to a 3-year deal and then sour on him as quickly as they did.
And
give up another pick for a 5th-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. They gave up
a 6th. They really wanted to get rid of him.
Yes, they really wanted to get rid of him. I guess they've decided clearly that they're going in a different direction. But I wonder what caused you to sour on this?
Yeah, that was the first thing that just came to my mind was, you know, what was the relationship like there? What caused that to happen?
Yeah.
But he's a big dude. Saw him in the locker room today.
Right.
Very big guy. They could use that sort of presence in there.
Well, we know that they need some run stuffing because Miami didn't have a running game per se at all. And then, of course, they had both, those two guys last week basically rip right through them.
Yeah.
You know, did over 150 yards worth of damage. So, the Patriots clearly have a need for run stuffing help in the middle. And if you're able to, you know, figure out a way to continue to restrict the movement on the line of scrimmage, which clearly, you know, Sopoaga is going to be that kind of guy, and you get, you know, healthy bodies back, which we're going to talk about here in just a moment, then, you know, you'd have to say that, you know, fortunes are looking up. They're not quite there yet, though.
No. Not yet, and, you know, we still have to see this guy on the field performing, see what he can do for us, but it's encouraging. I'm glad they made a move. They needed some help. They targeted someone that they felt can help them.
Do you find that their interest in targeting a defensive tackle as opposed to, say, a wide receiver or a linebacker or even a defensive back or a tight end,
let's say? Well, we don't know that they didn't.
Okay.
We can't say that.
We don't know definitively.
Right.
That's true. What they were able to swing a deal for was a tackle.
Right.
But let's just say, you know, for argument's sake here, because of the position they were able to land, does it come as a surprise as compared to any of the other needs, especially where depth is concerned?
To me, not really. I mean, obviously, I would have loved for them to get an impact wide receiver, you know, the one I wanted the whole time. Obviously, that wasn't really realistic.
What about Tony Gonzalez?
No interest. I really don't, because I'm fine with Gronk and Hooman and Mulligan. I don't really think that that's a screaming need for the Patriots.
Wouldn't
right
that
now.
Have certainly improved the fortunes in the red zone? More so than what you have now, with all due respect to the other guys?
Sure.
I mean, to me, it was kind of a no-brainer.
Sure.
I mean, you're talking about one of the best, you know, red zone targets, it may be in the history of the NFL. And you know, I realize it's a short time thing. It's an 8-game thing. It's a rent-a-player. And then he's retiring.
Right.
But, I mean, aren't you, if you're about winning, doesn't the thought at least cross your mind?
But here's the thing. They've had success running the football.
Yeah.
With the tight ends that they have. I'm not sure Tony Gonzalez would bring you, I mean, certainly would be a great receiver, no
right.
doubt about that, but
right.
I wonder at this point if he would be as effective a blocker, and whether or not bringing him in and taking away Mulligan or Hooman, most likely Mulligan, would benefit you overall.
Okay.
So I'm not really upset that they didn't get Tony Gonzalez.
All right. Well, so Puig is the dude in the middle now, for all practical purposes, and we'll get to more on the practice report coming up in a bit. But I want to switch our gears now toward the opponent this week of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ed Bouchette has covered the Steelers since the mid-'80s for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Also hosts a talk show on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, and he joined us here in the playbook. Ed, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. Thanks for taking some time today.
Sure, fellas. Thanks for having me.
So let's begin with a 2-6 Steeler team that doesn't look like any Steeler team that I've seen or even Eric's seen over the course of the last year or two. Why are they the way they are?
Yeah, John, and you already gave them another loss because they're only 2-5. But
there you go.
We'll be 2-6 after this weekend.
That was not done on purpose, Ed.
They have a little bit of a talent problem. Their offensive line has not done anywhere near what they had hoped. You know, they fed a lot of first and second round picks into that line.
Yeah.
And then at the very beginning, their Pro Bowl center was gone. They spent a lot of time on zone blocking. They threw that out when he got hurt. So you start there, and then the running back was hurt from the beginning, a guy they drafted in the second round, Le'Veon Bell, to revitalize their ground game. And that has gone nowhere. He had a right foot injury, missed the first several games. So that's pretty much it on offense. And then on defense, they're getting old and slow. Just like Warren Sapp said a couple years ago, it's finally coming true.
Yeah, that was a problem, I think, Ed, that really the Patriots were beginning to experience a couple of years ago. And then what the Patriots have battled with throughout the course of the last year or so, especially this year, is the infusion of youth. They have gone from one of the oldest teams in the league to, with first and second year players, the second youngest team in the league all told. So, quite a transformation. And I'm wondering if you can foresee that in the Steelers, maybe immediate future.
Yeah, John, they've been trying really, to pump some youth into that defense. You know, they drafted Jarvis Jones in the first round, outside linebacker. They drafted two first-rounders at defensive end. They had a kid they really liked in the third round at inside linebacker, and, you know, he came up with a knee injury that has knocked him out the last two seasons. So the first-rounders in the line, Ziggy Hood, was just benched in favor of the other first rounder, Cameron Haywood. So, the drafting hasn't been great there. Jarvis Jones has been benched for this game because he hasn't played well. So the young guys they're trying to put in there just haven't been up to snuff.
Yeah.
Ed, saw your tweet a little bit ago about Ben Roethlisberger and some comments that he had today. Must win this game? Is that what he said about the Patriots?
Yeah, game? And they followed it by saying, well, every game's a must-win for us from here on out, and I don't know what a must-win means. At 2-5 versus 3-5, they're not going anywhere this year, but they're trying to think to convince themselves they still can.
You know, I thought, you know, Bill Belichick likes to, you know, talk up his opponents, and said today that, you know, a few plays here or there, the Steelers could easily be, you know, that record could be inverted. But I tend to think that he's more than just blowing smoke this time. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that this is a better Steeler team than their record would indicate.
I would maybe say they're worse.
Oh, really?
Well, they lost to the Minnesota Vikings. Last I checked, what were they at? One win, the Vikings?
Mm-hmm.
And they lost to, at home, they lost their home opener to Tennessee, where they scored 9 points. And they lost at Oakland. Those aren't exactly the Super Bowl contenders they've lost to in three of those games. Now, the He did beat the Jets in New York the week before New England went there and lost. So I guess that may be a little feather in their cap, and they beat the defending Super Bowl champions at home the next week. But they're not the same team either, the Baltimore Ravens. So they've started out real slow. They've scored. I'm trying to look here how much they've scored in the first quarter. They've been outscored like 50-something to 19.
Then how come I still get
in the first quarter?
How come I still get an uneasy feeling about this game?
Like, well, maybe you've been watching the Patriots too much.
Yeah, maybe. That might be.
You know? Because they haven't been the Patriots we've known them to be in the past, although their record is.
Yeah.
I think they've done it. They've been the ones that done a real good job with injuries and you know, Tom Brady not being the Tom Brady we're used to seeing.
Right.
So it would not surprise me if the Steelers go up there and win, but I'm certainly not going to pick them to go up there and win.
Well, not that it really means a whole lot in the overall scheme of things, but because you have had a former Patriot on your roster in Zoltán Mezco, notice that he was waived this week to sign a guy like Matt McBryer. And again, I know a punter probably doesn't mean a whole lot in the scheme of things. However, I know that he had one shank, I guess, last week that led directly or at least indirectly to an Oakland touchdown. Was that sort of the straw that broke the camel's back for him?
Yeah, I'm surprised they cut him this week. I thought they might want to pick his brain about the Patriots punting game.
Yeah.
no, I'm kidding.
of course.
He did not field a snap well, and by the time he got the punt off, it allowed somebody to come in and tip it, and yeah, it went 3 yards, and it led to Oakland taking over at the 26 and scoring a touchdown.
Mm.
Another one he did shank. It went like 30 yards. Now, he also got a... He also got off a 65-yarder. He's been very inconsistent. He wasn't as good as the punter they had last year, Drew Butler, who they cut to keep this kid, Zoltán. But he was terrible. They had to get rid of him.
Well, that's too bad. He was a good kid, and frankly, I don't know that so much that he lost his job in New England as he became a victim of the contract that he had, and they kept kid Ryan Allen from Louisiana Tech, who was the Ray Guy winner the last couple of years at Tech, and obviously rookie minimum as opposed to what Mezco was going to command was sort of a no brainer if you can save $1 million on the cap.
Oh no! As soon as they picked him up, and I saw he had a $2 million contract on. I mean, that was obvious. Who wants to pay? I mean, you pay the guy out of San Francisco $2 million, but I don't know that you'd want to pay Zoltán Mezco $2 million.
Right. Understood. All right. So, I guess we're getting the sense that clearly this team has underperformed in most eyes who watch the Steelers, day in and day out. How much of this do you lay at the feet of Ben Roethlisberger?
I don't put anything at his feet. I think. If you look at his numbers, they're down. But I think the line has been so terrible and the running game so bad that he's been really under fire. The only way they've been able to move the ball is throw it, and usually they've been behind, and they know he's going to throw it, and they're just teeing off. He's been sacked 26 times in 7 games. Even his high, he's gotten sacked a lot through the years because he holds onto the ball and tries to make a play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made a few of those. But he's been sacked. 09 was his highest, was 50 sacks. And he's got 26 already, and he's not even halfway through the season.
Wow.
And he may not make it 3/4 of the way through the season if it keeps up.
Well, clearly the Patriots are also having some problems in keeping their quarterback relatively clean, so I guess that kind of brings at least a little bit of intrigue for Sunday. I'm guessing then I'm looking at some of the traditional areas of strength, and while they seem to be underperforming, the one guy that I keep, popping back up to that, seems to certainly get everybody's attention, I don't know if it's from respect or from his actual play this year, is Troy Polamalu on the defensive side. Is he playing up to his capabilities? Is he the only one?
He looks good out there jumping around, but he's not the same Troy. He's not making the big plays he used to make. In fact, when Terrell Pryor rattled off his 93-yard touchdown on the first play the other day, Troy was blocked clearly out of vision by a wide receiver. So, no, I don't think he has been. I don't think he's the same Troy.
So then does this mean that Mike Tomlin faces a complete blow up or a huge rebuild here? Or are there pieces to this puzzle that, you know, for the extent of this season can start the rebuilding process?
Yeah, I don't think there really is. You know, they just regressed one of those with Jarvis Jones. They were hoping they lost James Harrison. Actually, they cut him because he was going to make too much money. And they drafted Jarvis Jones, and they were hoping, because he came from a 3-4 defense at Georgia, that he'd be able to step right in. And he stepped right in, but he's right back out now because he couldn't handle the job. And, you know, that's one area where you thought they were going to get younger. Now they're going to a guy, Jason Worrells, who was a second-round pick. He's stuck around for 4 years and really has done nothing.
Wow. Do you think then that if this means that there is going to be an eventual clearing of the house, that, you know, first of all, is the head coach on the block? And second of all, what about guys like Todd Haley and Dick LeBeau?
Well, the head coach is not on the block. I mean, this team historically has patience with its head coaches. Bill Cowher won 3 straight years without making the playoffs, including a 6-10 record, and they gave him a contract extension after those 3 years. So, no, they'll stick with Mike. The assistants, that's fair game. I mean, Todd Haley's been here 2 years now. The offense has regressed. I'm not sure it was all his fault. He can't, you know, he's not the one drafting these offensive linemen, but nevertheless, he could very much be in doubt for next season.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
LeBeau will be done when he decides. I think it's time for him, because they've been real happy with what he's done.
Okay. So it's not so much the scheme as it may be time for some of the veteran players to eventually move on.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't emphasize, they have not replaced them with young guys. You know, another example would be Casey Hanson, who has been here for, you know, since 2002. Was a rock in the middle for them.
Right.
At nose tackle, they haven't been able to replace him. Steve McClendon just is not Casey Hanson. You know, the same at inside linebacker, where James Ferrier and Larry Foote were. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Timmons has done a nice job, but Larry Foote got hurt, and they haven't been able to replace him this year.
Which is unlike the Steelers, it seems like.
Yeah, this is all very, very strange for us from a New England perspective, because certainly the Steelers bring and have brought so much to the table in terms of this matchup, this rivalry, and, you know, it seems like these two teams have been playing for almost every AFC championship for the last decade or so. And so that's why, you know, the questions on the roster here, to be honest with you, Ed, because it's strange for us from the outside.
Yeah, Ed, believe me, it's strange here too. They've drafted very well through the years here. Kevin Colbert has, and some of these guys, maybe they're just a year or two away. You know, maybe Jarvis Jones, as a rookie, there's been no rookie start an outside linebacker here in 40 years. So maybe he needed a year to learn that Dick LeBeau defense, and the others have gotten, like Lamar Woodley got a year to learn it. Troy Polamalu got a year to learn it. But, you know, with their talent training they've had here, and the older guys getting older and them moving them out, they had to go with him, and it just hasn't worked so far. And maybe some of these offensive linemen that they've sunk all the first and second round picks in will come along next year. Who knows? Maybe it's going to take them a couple of years, but right now it's not working.
Then how does this team approach this week, at least in your estimation, and what have they told you about trying to get a win here? What needs to happen for them to win?
I think they just think they need to play better. I've been around some losing teams. I've been around here for a long time, and in the 80s and those 3 years I mentioned with Bill Cowher, there were some rough times here, and it always seems like teams just think they need to play better, but sometimes you just don't have the talent, or you have too many injuries. And I know the Patriots have had injuries too, and they're 6-2, but sometimes it just, they happen to the wrong guys and it just doesn't work. I mean, like, their offensive line has not had an opportunity to play together as a unit because of all their injuries.
Mm-hmm. What would then be a reasonable expectation for the Steelers as this, you know, season has reached the halfway point for the second half? What do you think would be reasonable enough to expect given what you've seen thus far?
Well, you mean record-wise?
Sure.
They're 2-5. I think if they can win six games, they'd be doing okay. Six, seven games. I don't expect them to be playoff contenders, though. Even though this division, after Cincinnati, nobody seems to want to be a playoff contender.
Yeah, well, it does kind of seem to go that way in stretches, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, a lot of people, look, there were two playoff teams from this division last year, and actually there were three in 2011. That, mm-hmm. You know, this was thought to be one of the better divisions, the AFC North, and it just doesn't look that way right now, although Cincinnati looks like a Super Bowl contender.
Right. It could very well be, especially where they dispatched the Jets this last week.
Yes, although you guys know the Jets better than I do, and pretty dysfunctional at times as well.
Dysfunctional, I'd say, would be a good way to put it. Ed, thanks so much for the time today. Certainly appreciate that, and safe travels this way.
We're going to see when we come up there Saturday, are we going to see a parade?
It's quite possible you may,
yes.
But I don't want to say that you will, because then we're jinxing it.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But
I'm a Boston native, so I'm pulling for it.
Hey, there you go. All right. See, now I did not know that. So that's
shout out to Lin, the city of sin.
Nice, nice. Well, then you know more than I thought you know. That's pretty good. I like that, Ed. Super. Sure, appreciate the knowledge today. Thanks again.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
See you Sunday.
That's Ed Bouchette, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at Ed Bouchette. B-O-U.
Does he sound like Big Al?
He does a little bit,
yeah,
doesn't
he? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Big Al? Did you think you were hearing yourself back on the radio?
Well, I thought for a second there, I almost thought Ed was going to start talking about Tim Tebow inside the 10. And if he did, then I really would have worried about it.
Follow Ed on Twitter, at Ed Bouchette. It's B-O-U-C-H-E-T-T-E. That's how you spell the last name. And you can follow him on Twitter. And so there you go. So we get some insight on the Steelers here midweek. You know, and frankly, you know, I haven't wanted to admit what I've seen, but what I've seen of the Steelers, I certainly haven't liked this year. I didn't really mean to give him the extra loss. That was sort of a Freudian slip, I think.
Well.
But at the same time, at 2-5, every time I've seen the Steelers, I have yet to be impressed. I have yet to be impressed, with the exception of the Jets game. Because, you know, they held the Jets to 6 points the week before they beat before the Jets beat the Patriots.
And they still make me nervous. That's why I was saying to Ed, I don't know. I'm still probably going to pick New England, but I'm nervous about it.
I think a lot of that, I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of that comes from the reputation the Steelers have earned over the years. And I think you're probably thinking that, oh, the Steelers can't be that bad, when Ed was sitting here telling us, well, yeah, they kind of are that bad, and that's the reason they are 2-5. I think a lot of that's just rep that they've earned.
I also, we've seen so many NFL games where a team,
Any team on any given Sunday.
A team has a bad record.
Maybe except for Jacksonville.
With the exception maybe of this year's Jacksonville, yeah. But in most cases, especially a team with the history that Pittsburgh has.
Yeah.
I've seen it too many times when a team is supposedly down and supposedly having a bad year, and they show up for a game like this against an opponent that they're fairly familiar with and have a history with. I don't know. I don't feel like there's a blowout that's waiting to happen on Sunday.
All right. We'd love to have your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com. The email address, the toll-free telephone number, 855-PATS-500, or the ACE ticket hotline at 508-298-0398. Yes, Twitter, at JR Broadcaster. Follow me on Twitter. He's at E_Scal. If you want to follow Eric and you're not already doing so, find me on Facebook as well at John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on the last name. So let's get to the phones, because we got a bunch of them lined up here. Chris leads us off in Fitchburg, Mass. today. Chris, you're in the playbook.
Yeah, how you doing? I hate to change the subject, but I really want to talk about our offense, because I believe it's more of an issue than our defense is. And I want to talk about the receivers that we're going to have to throw the ball to, and that's going to be Tompkins, that's going to be Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about Amendola?
Right now I think that you know, Brady's, you know, technique is just as good as it's always been, but he's in a situation that he's never been in before. He's going to have to adapt, and these guys are adapting with him. So when you get Tompkins, I think that he goes after the ball more than Dobson. So I would like to see Brady give the majority of the passes to him. because Dobson is more the type of player that likes you just to put it right in his chest. You know what I mean? And Cassie, he gets, I think he's more nervous and more unpredictable than Tompkins is. And I think that a lot of people don't pay attention to the fact that Tom Brady is always thinking about his receivers, even when he's not playing. So, you know, you got to give them time to mesh. You know, they got to come together, in my mind.
Well, okay. that's certainly true. I will take you to task, though, on Brady being technically sound all year. That has not been the case. He has not been himself, and that has a little bit to do with the fact that, you know, he's dealing with a whole new receiving core. I'll give you that much. But a lot of the times his receivers have been open, and he has he's either under or overthrown them. He's put the ball in bad spots. You know, his interception that he threw the other day was a perfect example of that. Gronk was open. He threw it behind him, and the defender came in and stepped in and was able to pick it off. So, and I'm curious I'm curious also that you left Amendola off that list, that you only went with the two rookies.
Listen, I mean, I was pumped when I saw him play in preseason. I mean, I just thought that he could replace Walker. I really did when I watched him there, but that's preseason. And when I saw him play during the regular season when the pressure's on, you know, I know he's hurt, and that comes into play. But, you know, Amendola, I have confidence in him. The reason why I was talking about Tompkins and Dobson is because I don't have as much confidence in them because, you know, they're new, and, you know, they really need to develop, obviously. I mean, that goes without saying. But I will agree with you that Brady has been not been as technically sound, as I said, because I'm known as a Brady sympathizer, and you know, that's because I look at the glass half full. I don't look at it half empty.
Right.
Empty. Other than that, you know, I think you guys are making some good points. I'd rather listen some more than talk.
Well, I don't know why, because you make just as much sense as we do.
Hey, you know, man, we're all in this together, man. We're all in this together.
See, now, that, Chris, that's a great way to put it. You're absolutely 110% correct about that.
Yeah, you know, you guys, I love you guys, man. I listen to you all day long, you know.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
Hey, take it easy, guys.
All right, talk to you later. Cuts Chris in Fitchburg, Mass. He's making some valid points.
I'm still not completely confident in the two rookies either. Because
the Wookiees, yeah, I know.
Because they're getting better at this, but I wish we did have Chewbacca. It would help out a little bit.
We need him.
They still drop too many passes that they shouldn't.
Yeah, and it happened again this week.
They're getting better at that. The number is decreasing each week,
but
they still doing
it. The first one to Dobson this last week was a drop again. You know, so I'm like, you know, what the heck? And then, you know, even Tompkins hasn't even been targeted since the winning score basically against New Orleans. I think he's been targeted, what, two, three times? I mean, it certainly hasn't seemed like it's been much.
Yeah.
And what's the reason behind that?
Well, I think part of it is Gronk is back. He's taken away some of those.
Yeah, I understand, but don't you think you can lean too far one way? I mean, especially when you know that it's coming. I mean, the interception, you know, was obviously a bad pass by Brady. But how about the overthrow over the middle when he's in triple coverage?
Right.
I mean, come on, Tom. Triple coverage?
Yeah.
Double coverage, I can see. Triple coverage, and you can't see that? I can see that, and I'm not the All-Pro Hall of Famer. So what's the deal?
Well, it's kind of like Bledsoe with Ben Coates. Remember? He would throw to Ben Coates no matter what. And 95 times out of 100, Ben Coates is making that catch. I think Brady has the same comfort level with Gronk. Doesn't matter if you put two or three guys on him. I think he can still make the catch.
But if Tom can't be accurate with the pass.
Yes. I agree.
Then you can't expect him to go up and get the ball.
Right.
Drew, at least to Ben Coates, would throw it in double coverage because he knew Ben could go get it.
Mm.
The problem is that the pass is off the mark, which most of them have been this year. Mm. All you have to do is look at the stats, and that will tell you the case this year that Tom has not been as accurate as he has been previously. So throwing into double coverage is an accident waiting to happen. Or in this case, triple coverage.
Yeah, it's dicier proposition, that's for sure.
Yes, way dicier. Mm-hmm. All right, here's Dave in Connecticut. Dave, you're in the playbook.
Hey, guys, how we doing today?
Good, Dave.
You know, I agree with what you were just talking about with Brady. I think, you know, you can almost go back when he had Moss. He would single out Moss and throw in a, you know, double coverage, you know, at times triple coverage. And, you know, Moss would, you know, 9 out of 10 times pull the ball down or make some, you know, circus catch to make that catch. You know, when Brady's at his best, you know, he's spreading the ball around. Okay. You know, he's hitting, you know, six or seven different guys a game, and you know, that's when Brady's at his best. You know, I think when Gronk first came back, you know, he targeted him, I don't know, like
17 times in that game. 17.
In that game?
Yeah, 17.
So, well, there you have it. I mean, but, you know, I agree what you're saying about the rookies to a certain extent, but I thought Dotson, after that drop, had a pretty solid game, and it's good.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and this is still the process that we've kind of talked about, Dave, over the last several weeks, is that, you know, where the rookies are concerned, the Wookiees, whatever you want to call them, where they're concerned, they've got to take two steps forward and one step back. And we expect that to happen as long as the forward progress continues. We saw a little bit of a hiccup last week. So this week, I want to see another step forward from these guys. It's all part of the process.
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, it's been a learning process through the entire season. You know, hey, I think, we're talking about defense a little bit here. I think that was a really good trade that we made. It was the only trade in the NFL, I understand, over the trade period. I think, this guy is definitely a run stopper, and he's going to help us in strengthening that D line.
Well, he's going to definitely fill space, okay? He's 6'3", 330?
6'2", 330? I'll
tell you right now. Yeah, he's a big boy. He's a big boy.
He's listed 6'2", 300.
Probably bigger than that. When we gained the sixth, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. We picked up a fifth and gave them a sixth. Other way around.
We got a sixth.
And the player.
They got a fifth.
The two, yes. Right. So I still think that's a hell of a deal.
Yeah, you know, yes. It was Belichick being Belichick, you know, doing his homework. You know, I don't think it was really an indictment against Jones or the other big guy.
No, it's not an indictment at all. In fact, what it is, he's trying to give those guys help. He needs somebody in the rotation. Now, pause here for just a second, Dave, and I don't mean to interrupt, but the reason I want to do that is because, from practice today, which, you know, obviously Eric was there, we had some great news in that concern.
Yeah, Tommy Kelly.
Tom Kelly's back.
Tommy Kelly was back. Not just him, but Leon Washington. Shane Vereen, everybody
was there
at practice.
Today.
62 players.
Back too.
Tlaib was there too.
Tlaib's been back.
He has. Remember, Tlaib practiced all last week, and then they deactivated him on Saturday.
Yeah, he hasn't played the last two games, but he's practiced since the Friday before the
right.
You know, and I will say something on that Tlaib thing. I really like this kid, Logan Ryan, 26. Yep. Mm-hmm. I think he stepped up, and you know. And they might have found a player there.
He's improving. He's certainly, you know, he was very roller coaster in the preseason.
And here's one
but he's
for
he's
you
leveled off a little bit. He's gotten he's found, I think, a nice sweet spot.
Nice niche.
Yeah.
Now offensively, you know, don't get me wrong. I love seeing Blunt on the field, and I think it's we're the only NFL team that has a 250-pound kickoff returner, mm-hmm. which is, you know, kind of funny. What is going on with Boyce? I mean, I understand maybe he's not performing up to the expectations as a wide receiver, but when they drafted this kid, you know, they were talking about his speed. Why aren't they using him as a kick returner? I don't get it.
Well, because he's not even active on game days.
The argument that I had for that yesterday, Dave, because I covered that and a couple of other things that you've talked about here in yesterday's program. He's really kind of one dimensional. He doesn't play a lot of special teams, and so with kickoffs, you're only able to return maybe one or two an entire game. The way that these kickers are putting into the back of the end zone, it's taken up a roster spot on a team that stresses versatility of all of its members, and he's just not versatile enough. And he's also third and the fourth choice on wide receiver. So if he's not beating out those guys, then where else is he contributing? And the answer to that is he's not. So that's why he's inactive.
Active, right. Well, I think this Pittsburgh game is definitely, you know, it's going to be an interesting game. I agree with both of you guys. You know, a little nervous, but, you know, I think we're going to do rather well. I'd say maybe like a 27-14 kind of a game.
He's already up.
Wow, he's already jumping ahead.
Already jumping in on the prediction
Thursday. It's only Wednesday.
I'm not going to officially mark that down because I'm going to make you send it in tomorrow. That's all.
Tomorrow.
That's all right. I was thinking it was Thursday today too. I'm getting ready for Halloween.
Exactly, Dave. Dave, thank you for the phone call. By the way, what do we do? Just as a sort of a Zen question here, what do we do if the Sox don't clinch it tonight and the Game 7's on Halloween? What the hell?
Yeah, I don't want that because I want to focus on
the game
or
one or
the other. Yeah. And I'd rather focus on Halloween because it's Halloween.
What did you think of Belichick's getup for the party on Tuesday?
I didn't see it.
It's been posted online. If you haven't seen it, I know NFL Network had it earlier today, and they may still be showing it because it was part of the. It was in his pirate suit
again,
and he had his girlfriend in the pirate wench suit, and he had the knife to her throat or the sword to her throat, and the whole thing. In fact, I believe they posted it on ESPNBoston.com.
Oh yeah,
I think it was in the blog that they have running there. I think I saw that there earlier today.
Okay.
In case you wanted to see the pirate suit, so. Arr, he looked pretty good, actually, One of those little, grins on his face. Typical Bill grin, and, he's got a nice-looking girlfriend.
Bill is a pirate.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think of all the cliches that we could use if he actually were a pirate,
Let's not go too crazy
all
on
right.
that, right?
Yeah, probably the answer is
I think it's probably just as well. A couple of emails here. Brian in Essex, Vermont says, so John, on PFF, Sopoaga is ranked lower 37th against the run than Villano and Jones, who are 11th and 30th respectively. Now, I'm not so sure how PFF, Pro Football Focus goes about their rankings against the run, but nevertheless, he says, do you think that has to do with how he was used in Philly, or do you think that's simply his ability? I.e., do you think that he has more skill than his current stats reflect? I don't really buy into some of those, rankings against the run for an individual because it really is not up to an individual player.
Right.
I'm not sure what the hell PFF is ranking. I'll be quite honest with you.
I don't know. I have to do a little
I don't know how they determine it, to be honest with you, Brian. I really don't know. I mean, maybe they're breaking down the film to an extent, but again, if your job is to be a two-gapper, if your job is to sit there and take on blockers so the linebackers can come up and make the play.
Yeah, and if they're not,
then I'm going to guess that you're, then I'm going to guess that you're going to be ranked low as a run stopper because guess what? You're not stopping any runs.
Mm.
Does that not make sense to anybody? All you're doing is filling space to allow other people to make plays.
Right. And if they can't, then you all look bad.
Right. So I don't buy into the, with all due respect, I think the guys at PFF and Cold Hard Football Facts, I think they do a magnificent job. And, and I love Kerry Byrne and our own, Russell Baxter, who does a lot of work for Cold Hard Football Facts as well. But I don't get some of the formulas they use, and I'm not entirely certain that, they're really that accurate anyway. I think that they're trying to do some things to justify their existence by trying to break these things down numerically. And I just don't think you need to do that. I think it needs to pass the eye test. And if it passes the eye test, then all right, if you want to break it down further, that's fine. But as far as the eye test is concerned, I won't know, and I don't really think Eric will know, and I don't think anybody here will know until we actually see Sopoaga out there on the field, because we haven't been focused on Philadelphia this year.
No.
And we certainly really haven't been focused on San Francisco, where he spent 10 years before he came to the Eagles this year.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a week with them in the summer, but that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, and it just, you don't see anything in the summer.
Right.
This is, you're just going through the motions against the other guys in these scrimmages.
Right.
So you don't really, you just don't see anything.
Yeah, and the last time we played San Francisco was last season, but I don't remember anything from
he didn't
from
really stand out one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, we need to see a good close look at him, and if the Patriots are bringing him in here, and I'm assuming they're bringing him in here because they feel that he can fulfill a succinct and definite role in what the Patriots are trying to accomplish. I also know that depending on whether or not they get Tommy Kelly back this week or in the next couple of weeks, that he's going to be a part of a rotational mix between Kelly and Villano and Jones. And Sopoaga. So these are the guys that are all going to rotate in there at tackle, so therefore they can use Chandler Jones and or Andre Carter to what they were originally intended, and that is be defensive ends and put pressure on the quarterback.
Mm.
So they don't have to keep sliding them to the tackle. Now, you'll probably see that from time to time, because, again, they like the mismatch.
I think it's been fairly effective. I think Chandler Jones has done a good job doing that in those situations.
He seems to have done it. But the problem is you don't want to rely on that as your bread and butter.
No, you don't.
Because then it takes away from it.
right.
from the surprise factor, and it also beats up your player.
Right.
He's going up against these 300-pound linemen. That beats up your player. Ross in Canada says, I agree with Eric on that uneasy feeling with Pittsburgh coming to town. When a team like this comes to town, I think of a very specific game. When the 07 Pats played the Ravens, whom I believe were a four-win team that year, they gave us all we could handle late in the season. And if not for a drive-extending penalty on a failed fourth down, they would have ended the undefeated run. Every year there are teams better than their record suggests who just can't get it together consistently, which is why it's so important to remember that anything can happen on any given Sunday.
Yeah.
Ross in Canada, that's an excellent point and a good email.
Is.
It's very true. Here's Eldridge in North Carolina. Hello, Eldridge.
Hey, how y'all doing, John?
Good,
Eric.
Good,
what's
buddy.
Up? How you doing?
Yeah, I feel the same way, but I'm glad that they did make a run on the defensive end side, or defensive line side, but I was hoping to do something on the offensive side, maybe.
Well, we know how you feel about the receivers.
I'm with you.
Yeah, but
we were never going to get Larry Fitzgerald. I know. I was bummed about it too.
Nick.
Pipe dream.
Wouldn't that have been a great?
Oh, you're talking about
move.
That might have been the one thing that could steal the buzz away from the Red Sox in the World Series.
Yeah, that would have been.
It might have been.
Maybe
it might have been. Mm-hmm. It might have been.
But I want to get back, ask you a couple questions. Something that you said the other day. I don't understand why they ain't using Ridley either. Blunt back there as a kickoff returner, he's slow. He's very slow.
Ridley as a kickoff returner?
As a kick returner or as a running back?
I don't want Ridley as a kick returner.
No. Running back, as a running back, period. And then I can't see why they're using Blunt as a kick returner, period.
Yeah.
He's slow, you know. You don't have the speed to break nothing. You just go, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah, well,
but Courtney's a better returner than Blunt.
Nah.
And so is, you know.
No, he's not. He's proven that. We had McCourty doing that the last year or so, and he wasn't that much better.
Well, he does have a kick return for a touchdown, though.
He has one, but, I mean, that doesn't make him better overall.
Maybe not overall, but still, you know, you got a 250-pound guy back there. You know, who's slow. It takes them, 20 years to get...
You know what? The only thing I can say about that is, I mean, you're right. They do need more talent back there, whether it's someone faster or someone like Leon Washington who can read the blocks better. But they're not doing any worse field position-wise than they have the last 3 or 4 years since they lost Ellis Hobbs. They haven't had anybody who can get it past the 22-yard line, it seems like.
Okay. If you had somebody on defense that you could have got besides the lineman, this type. What area would you target? What area would you have targeted?
I probably still would have looked defensive back, but that's just me.
And linebacker too?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I think they went after what I would have wanted.
Yes. I think they definitely attacked the area of need that was the biggest, that was the greatest area of need in defensive line, without a doubt.
Yeah, because I'm really happy with the way McCourty has been playing safety this year. I think he's finally found his... niche too. And I think he's really, I think he's embraced playing safety. And the fact that he is a cornerback at heart helps instinctively, I think, with being able to play the safety position.
Agreed. I think his cornerback abilities, as they were, have helped him become a pretty good safety.
Yeah.
Because now he's more versatile at the safety position.
Right.
When in the past, a safety is usually a little bit more of a not quite as multidimensional as a cornerback needs to be.
Right. And, once Tlaib can come back, I'm okay with the Tlaib, Dennard, Arrington / Logan Ryan / Marquise Cole rotation.
They've had their problems at times, but
you put all of those pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad.
No, it's not
bad.
It's certainly serviceable, especially if one of those guys in there is Tlaib most of the time, because he sort of leads by example. Those guys rally around him. They respond to him.
Yeah.
Tlaib to me has been and will be the most valuable player on this defense this year.
I agree with it 100%, John. But I still say I will cut Cole and sign Sanford Rowe in a heartbeat. Or Aaron in a heartbeat. But getting back to my buddy Brady, you know, I wish he'd calm down some. But like you said, John, you don't throw triple coverage and you got somebody open somewhere. You know what I mean? You're a Hall of Famer, you ought to know that.
Yep.
You know, I know that's your security blanket. But right now, he ain't so secure because he ain't in football shape yet. He ain't the grump. Gronkowski, he ain't the Gronk yet. Mm. And
still Dobson, pretty damn good, though.
Dobson, yeah, but I understand Dobson and what you call, you know, they make more drops. And I think he's losing faith out of Amendola. I don't think he has more faith than Amendola because a couple of passes he could have had, he done dropped. Or he was in the right places a couple of times. But
well, I'm Eldridge. I know how you are about wide receivers, but I'm willing to give Amendola even I've been critical of him, but I'm willing to give him a pass just because he got. Yeah, I'd like to give him a couple of passes that he don't want to, but I'm willing to give him one on the injury just because of the concussion. I mean, he took a big hit, and you know that, and he is back.
Yeah.
He is back sooner than I expected,
God, yeah.
Way sooner. So I think, you know, and maybe he's doing this because of the perception that's out there. I don't know. And I hope he's...
Well, his doctors have to make that decision, so hopefully they're doing it for the right reason.
I hope that that's the case. Eldridge, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it, buddy, as always. All right, so here we go. We know what we have in store for this week. We'll continue to sort of formulate the ideas. We'll get into jump a little bit more about the Steelers tomorrow as well. Talk about them. Jim Nance is going to be on the program tomorrow.
Good.
Obviously, Russell Baxter will be here in the playbook tomorrow as well. So, and you and I will break it down, and we'll also try to...
Give
away some more yearbooks tomorrow. All right. All right. Before we say bye bye to Eric.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
All right, dazzle me.
How did we do last week?
Even remember.
You don't remember?
I don't even remember.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you two for the price of one today. How's
two?
That? Yeah. Because they're related. They're related.
Okay.
So, that's why.
All right.
Katabatic.
Katabatic?
With a K. K-A-T-A-B-A-T-I-C. Katabatic.
Katabatic.
Yeah. And the its opposite is anabatic.
Anabatic.
A-N-A-T-A-B-I-C.
So katabatic,
yep,
and anabatic.
With a K, and anabatic.
And the meanings are?
Katabatic refers to, you usually see that coupled with the word wind, katabatic wind, which describes a wind that is downward moving or flowing down a slope.
Okay.
And anabatic is just its opposite.
Going
upward
up,
or moving
up, slope.
Up a slope. Yeah.
So are we going to have any katabatic winds this weekend at Gillette Stadium?
I hope not, because that would really have an impact on the football game.
Yes, it would.
It got me thinking, though, yesterday I was seeing some footage of the big storm over in Europe.
Yeah.
You know about that?
Yeah.
And the winds really devastating.
Yeah, I saw the video, yeah.
That was in my mind when I was thinking of the words today, so...
Katabatic.
Yeah, katabatic.
And anabatic.
Downward, anabatic, upward.
Upward.
Winds. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if we have any anabatic winds either, then certainly we'll play wreak havoc with the field goal kicking,
yes.
I would assume, right?
Yeah. See the flags flying straight up instead of sideways.
That would be not a good thing for football.
No.
All right. Okay. E, thank you very much for the lesson.
Thank you very much to the sweet Robin for these.
She did a good job.
These incredible cranberry cakes.
Well, you know, it's technically cranberry bread, but if you've ever had banana bread, then you understand. Yeah, it's more like a cake, but it's pretty good.
First ever cranberry I've had straight from the fresh bog.
Yes, the bog in my backyard in Berkeley, Mass. Yes, absolutely.
Love it.
Picked ourselves, or actually picked by Robin's mom. She's the one that went out.
Oh, really?
She's the one that went out there with the big barrel.
The big.
Put on the. I wanted to do that. I wanted to put the waiters on.
I was gonna say that's how you do it in Texas. You send the poor old lady out to harvest the cranberry.
She beat me to it. But she was over there because she wanted to see, you know, oh, I've never seen them harvest them. And so I was actually here doing my job on the radio.
Oh, boy.
And she went out there and she said, hey, any chance we can get some of these? And the gentleman who owns the bogs, he said, absolutely, because of the residences that are here on the property.
Yeah.
He says, sure, anybody that brings over a big, you know, jug, big barrel, whatever, you can get what you want because there's more than enough to go around. So she went right back in the house, got a couple of big iron pots.
Wow.
And she said, okay, fill her up. So I've got, you know, a couple of pounds of frozen cranberries in my freezer right now. And so Robin was able to unfreeze and produce the cranberry bread.
Well,
there you go.
You will never have a shortage of people who want to eat this. It's the delectable sweets.
There you go.
Really good.
See? Much better than the candy crap that you're going to get on Halloween for tomorrow night, I think.
Maybe if she cut them up and wrapped them, you could give them out.
No, that,
no,
see, that,
you
would,
know what?
That
don't
work.
Don't that do that. That, no. that means less for us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, number one, yeah. Yes.
Also,
number two.
Kids are so sensitive about it, and the parents are
yeah.
so
yeah.
sensitive.
Yeah, if they see something that's
if
wrapped
you know,
in a package.
Someone you know, though.
Yeah, then you could give it to them, right. Yeah, someone.
In the old days, right. It would be fine. But
oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. I remember getting muffins in my bag really? As a kid. Yes. Somebody actually gave a muffin,
what
like a chocolate chip muffin or something. I'm like, are you serious?
You should have thrown it at them.
Oh. A muffin? I used to get, remember the popcorn balls?
Yeah, those, not a huge fan. They do some damage to your teeth.
Oh, man.
Tomorrow we'll have to do a little segment on your favorite Halloween candy.
Oh, yeah, we'll figure out a way to do that one. That'll have to be a part of the process tomorrow. All right, Biggie, thank
okay.
you, sir.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. You got it. All right, here we go. Once again, webradio@patriots.com. The email, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number, or the ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. What are your thoughts on the Steelers? Do they scare you? Do they concern you, or are they as bad as what you've seen this year? One of the things that we need to know, and your thoughts on Isaac Sopoaga, the new addition to the Patriots defensive line. Is there another spot on this roster you feel needed more attention than the defensive line? Love to hear your thoughts on both of things. Coming up right here in the playbook.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Oh, excuse me, ladies, coming through. Guess what day? Like ooh, popcorn! Hey, guess what? Popcorn!
Oh, you put extra butter, huh? Nice.
What day is it? What's today? What? What? Do I have popcorn in my teeth?
I mean, we talked for a long time.
Hey, Mike! Guess what day it is?
It's
movie day! Turn off your cell phone!
You know him.
Let me call you back. Yeah, we work together.
Is that your mom, man? Movies with your mom. I dig it, dude. That's nice. Movie day? Woo woo! Yeah! Give it up! Movies!
Love the Geico camel. It is hump day. Thank you. Yeah! It is hump day. But that, in case you hadn't heard, we played that a couple of weeks ago. That is now playing in theaters across the country. Maybe you've even seen it, but that's sponsored by Geico, obviously, because that's the company that came up with the character anyway, to get people to turn off their cell phones in movie theaters. So pretty cool anyway. Thought you might like that again. At least Kevin has become a big fan now of the Geico Camel. Haven't you, Kev? Big fan of the Geico Camel.
Yeah, I'd like
Camel.
To dress up as him for Halloween.
Now that would be a great costume. Honestly.
Yeah. I think you need two people. You need two
probably
people to be
would
the humps.
Need, yeah. Somebody's got to be the hump, right? That's a good role for you. I'll be the head. You be the hump.
There we go. That'd scare some people.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that, though. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. At any rate, it would be a novel idea. There's no doubt about that. All right. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500. Hey, I wonder if anybody owner showed up at the team's Halloween party on Tuesday night dressed as the Geico Camel. That's got to be like the in or the hot costume for somebody this year. I don't know. Matt sends me this note on Facebook. He says, I took a look back at Sopoaga last night a little. He's no world beater, but he is a solid guy who eats up blockers. I think it allows you to rotate the rookie linemen, although they might make better Wookiees than receivers, haha. He and Kelly are on the same line, makes it very dangerous. It will open things up for people to be more aggressive, so I think it was a very good trade. Excellent. Excellent. Like the opinion. Somebody's taking the time to check it out and see what they think. I think that works out real well. What are your thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on Sopoaga overall? Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. Here's Steve in Killeen, Texas. Hey, Steve, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. Speaking of characters, I don't know about Chewbacca's availability, but he's 7'3", about 350, and given what we saw him of him running through the Millennium Falcon, I'm putting him about probably speed.
I think he would be a great choice to sign as a free agent. Yes, can you imagine him at defensive end?
Can you imagine a nose tackle and getting Wolford back next year?
And especially if he doesn't bathe with that fur, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but, you know, I think the Fuhr would probably give him the soft hands that we need for our receivers to have. But
yeah.
all that aside, onto the reality of Silk coming in, he fits the Patriots' profile well. I mean, he's basically a guy who comes in with the lunch pail, does his job, and, you know, there's not a lot of fanfare there. So I'm glad that we got him to augment our defense and open up some options for guys like Joey the Hitman Villano,
mm-hmm.
Kelly, and others
mm-hmm.
to step up. And, you know, if they can get a better push from the D-line, the old adage, you know, the best defense is a good offense and the best offense is a good defense, has definitely proved out this year. And if we can get the complimentary play from the fourth quarter to kind of be replicated going forward, John, I'm feeling pretty good about how the season's going to shape up.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to give that some thought. Clearly, I need to see, you know, everything continue to unfold over a little bit of time. But, you know, the one encouraging thing that we talked about with Eric in the opening hour, Steve, was, you know, everybody was back today at practice. Everybody was healthy. You had a plus one even out there. So, because you had Shane Vereen back out there, you know, beginning to work out again since we are, at that point in time where he can come back. Now, he won't be eligible this week, but, he's begun his workouts. Next week's the bye week, and I fully expect to see him back, you know, in 2 weeks. And if that is the case, and this team does take a step closer to getting healthier with, of course, the lone exception or the two exceptions being Wilfork and Mayo, then yeah, I think everybody has a right to feel a little bit better about the way things are going in here at the midway point of the year.
And if AD and Tom can continue to, you know, improve, get that one extra catch a game going forward as well, John, you know, again, the feelings of, you know, the warm fuzzies improve. My only thing is I want to see that production on third down. I think that's really been our Achilles heel on offense all year long. And, you know, the numbers kind of proved that out. And the loss, it was, what, 2-12? Or, I'm sorry, in the win, it was 2 out of 10. And in the losses, it was 1-12 for third down conversions.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, yeah, so go ahead.
So I just want to see us be more solid there. And then, you know, the questions of Brady and, you know, where he is physically, I don't, you know, I know we'll never really get an answer probably until the off season.
Yeah.
As to what's really going on with Tom.
Right.
So I'm going to kind of leave that alone and say if we get the rookie receivers to continue to develop and he has more weapons in where he's not, you know, lasered in on Edelman or Gronk, I think we get back to seeing more of the Patriots model that it appears that Josh McDaniels has been trying to follow.
Right. Steve, we'll be a little closer, I think, to that. My frustration, I think, with the overall process has been the inability to game plan differently, that it seems like they've been planning for this particular way without the proper personnel sets, and I just don't see a whole lot of versatility here. And then the problem is exacerbated by the fact that Brady has been inaccurate, and that's why I brought up the whole conversation a few weeks ago about maybe we're seeing the beginning of the end, which we do in every player in the league. Some are more demonstrative than others, but it just happens. It's called Father Time. It's called wear and tear. It's called the NFL. So, you know, I think all of these things are kind of creating the perfect storm right now. And this is why we've had the troubles that we've seen on offense. Now, will these troubles abate somewhat? Yes, and I do expect them to pull back a little bit when you are able to get the healthier pieces back in there. However, as has been brought up again previously in this show today, you know, Gronk's not going to be Gronk right off the bat. He's got to get himself back in football shape. That goes for Vereen. That goes for Amendola. That goes for anybody else that's in there. They've got to make sure that if they've been out for a while, you got to give them a chance to get back into rhythm, if you will, if not football shape. And I do think there is something to that. And I also believe there is something to the rules and the regs. And we've kind of touched on this, you know, off and on over the last few weeks, especially since we started the program this year, over, you know, the new rules and regs over guys limiting contact in the preseason. Because quite frankly, I think it is a negative. Guys can become seasoned and conditioned to taking the hits, as opposed to not doing a lot of hitting during the preseason because there's just not a whole lot of serious football going on. And you and I and everybody in the the free world knows this. And so when it comes to, you know, blowing the whistle and kicking the ball off for keeps, these guys are mean. They're fast. They're tough. They hit hard. They lead with their helmets, even though they're not supposed to. And guys get hurt. And that's part of the reason why we're seeing some of this. It's not the entire reason. What I'm saying is it's kind of adding into the mix. And so you got to take all these things into consideration. And the best way for the Patriots to fix the problem that they have is, first of all, you know, they've got to develop some versatility in the offense and be willing to go a different direction and not be stubborn. Because I think there's stubbornness in here, and I think McDaniels, frankly, is taking that from Belichick, because I think that he's shown over time that he can be stubborn. That's number one. Number two, when you get the healthy parts back, don't throw everything at them, including the kitchen sink, right off the top, which is what I think Brady's been trying to do with Gronk, and that's why he's gotten picked. I mean, the one in triple coverage this last week was ridiculous. It was a joke. It was not something you would expect a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback to do. Something that I would do. Maybe you would do. But nobody else would have a brain would do that. Yet he did it. Now, is his hand hurt? I think so. I don't think he's letting on. And I said this yesterday. I'll say it again today. He's fibbing. He's not telling the truth. But it's not enough to keep him out of the lineup. So I give him credit for that. So whatever the case may be then, if the hand is not properly healed or whatever, then by God, dial up some shorter routes. You know, or hand the ball off, or get Ridley out there instead of having, you know, LeGarrette Blount in there, because he's the wrong back for what this offense needs most of the time. Not all the time, most of the time.
Which brings up another point, too, John. If they're going from that template of we're going to do what we did last year, with the loss of Woodhead, what happened to our outlet pass and kind of swing pass and getting a guy in the flat and letting him try to get the yards after the catch?
Yeah, you're right. And I think it shows everybody how important a guy like Danny Woodhead really was in the last couple of years. And that went by the wayside when Shane Vereen got hurt, because that was his role. And so when Vereen does come back to play after this week and after the bye week, and hopefully he's, you know, going to be in, at least in pseudo football shape where he can get a few reps in there. And again, I don't expect him to be, you know, toting the ball 20 times a game or anything. I don't even expect him to get 20 snaps, but while he's in there, I want him to be productive. Then that's another step toward giving the offense the weaponry that it needs in the original playbook to be successful this year. Hopefully they can put all this together by the time December 1 rolls around, because that's when you really need to start playing your best football.
And I expected kind of a power sweep where Blount would lead based on his rumbling style to give him that, get up to speed and have Ridley just falling behind him on a short outlet pass or just a pitch.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Let's try to get him on edge. I mean, I totally agree with that. I, you know, even though you lose an offensive lineman this week in Vollmer, you know, Marcus Cannon knows how to do it, and he's played all the positions. He's played both tackle spots. He's played guard, you know, and he was in a high-octane offense at TCU a few years ago as well. So I think Marcus Cannon, I don't really expect there'll be any drop-off. With all due respect to Vollmer, who's probably one of the better right tackles in the league, I really don't expect there to be much drop-off at all. What we need to see is a collective effort from that line to keep Brady clean, because teams are bringing the hat to Tom Brady, and he's gone down now, what, 17 times in the last 4 weeks. If my math is correct, that's a little better than four a week. That's going to get your QB hurt. Yeah, and if he's got the bum hand, then guess what? He's already hurt. Now you're going to get him hurt worse. What happens then?
And that's why I'm saying those quick outlets, you know, if you have a guy who's done a pulling guard type position or where you're pulling the tackle, use the option and keep Brady upright and people getting blood.
I agree. And he's got to be able to utilize Amendola and, you know, for the short stuff over the middle. He's got to, you know, instead of trying to stretch the field with Gronk, maybe he needs to find, you know, teams are taking the middle away. That's one of the things that they have identified. Number one, Brady wants to throw the short. I think you're right, Steve. So they're taking the middle and the short stuff away, and they're going to make him try to beat them with the longer range stuff, which is why you saw him probably throw into triple coverage to Gronk last week. Teams are taking the middle of the field away. So you're going to have to figure out a way to adjust. How do you loosen them up? Run the damn ball.
And the other side of that, though, John, is far taking away the deep routes. There have been deep routes open with the rookie receivers and even with Gronk for the one that he caught that got called back. And I think, what was it, a week or two ago that Brady just missed?
Yeah.
Those have been open. We just haven't hit them when we needed them.
Yeah, and there have been other factors here. You know, Yeah, you've got to catch the balls when they're thrown to you, and we still get a drop every now and then. And, you know, and routes haven't been run properly. And you can see where this thing is kind of snowballing. And this is why you're in the catch 22 situation that you are with the offense. One thing sort of, you know, leads to another. So the only thing you can do is hopefully get all the pieces to the puzzle back, put them out there again and say, okay, guys, now it's time to produce. You can't, you know, blame injury. You can't blame absence. You can't, I mean, now's the time to step up and do it. So
yeah, my only concern with the Steelers going forward, John, is kind of the wounded animal mentality. I mean, the Steelers really have nothing to lose at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a matter of who shows up and how much they show up, I think, is really going to kind of determine the game, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
You know, I'm optimistic.
Well, I would be cautious in your optimism. Very cautious. Because, you know, after all, yes, there is reason to be optimistic overall because you are 6-2 and you've had a plethora of problems here. You have the veritable cornucopia of problems. So you're still 6-2. You're still leading the division and you're still controlling your own fate and your own destiny. And you're right there in the hunt for even a bye, for God's sake. And we're only halfway through the season now. So, yeah, you have every reason to be optimistic, but I would just be cautious in that optimism because you don't know what the next shoe to drop will be. And the way this season is going, that shoe is going to drop somewhere.
And the bottom line, John, is if we can get just a little bit more production out of the offense, the defense kind of maintains, I think we're going to be okay this game.
And that's nail on the head stuff right there. Thank you for the phone call today. Speaking to the defense, keeping, you know, where they are, Bull Wolf from PhiladelphiaEagles.com is going to join us in 10 minutes, and we're going to find out what kind of player we're getting in Isaac Sopoaga. So he's going to join us in 10 minutes, and we'll see what we can reasonably expect from Sopoaga's addition to the line. Here's Matt in Watertown, Matt, Watertown, Mass. Matt, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, Matt.
You know, I think Isaac Sopoaga is going to do good. If Belichick goes back to the 4-3, I think if they'll be able to plug in Sopoaga next to, is Tommy Kelly back, by the way?
He came back to practice today.
Okay. Yeah, so I think
now that doesn't mean he's going to play because we've seen Tlaib practice now for 4 or 5 straight practices
right.
And he hasn't played yet.
That's right. But I think Isaac Sopoaga would do very good next to Tommy Kelly. He did great next to Ray McDonald when he was in his time with the Niners.
Okay,
so I think he'll be great in the 4-3 scheme. As far as the defense goes, obviously the run defense needs to improve, but the pass defense has been great. They've been holding their own all season long, or at least up to this point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
One thing on McDaniels.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the play calling needs to be more aggressive, or he's been too aggressive?
No, I think it needs to be flexible. I don't think it's necessarily a question of aggressiveness. I don't even mind some of the downfield strikes in order to kind of loosen up a defense because they have been trying to take the middle away against New England. If you look at it closely, you can see that that's why Tom's going to the side and that's why he's trying to go up the field and that's why some of the running lanes have not been there because they're taking the middle away. They know he wants to go there. That's his priority. So, you know, the play calls don't bother me as much as, all right, if they're taking this away, then we need to adjust and go here. And I don't think we stay with one thing enough. Like, you know, the run seems to work and then we get away from the run. Or we go on the sideline route and then, you know, if that seems to work, then they go away from it because I don't see the other teams adjusting to it. They seem to kind of stay the course of taking the middle of the way and seeing if Brady can beat them with the accuracy on the edge or with the deep, you know, with the deep throw. And so you're going to have to step up and make a play somehow. And the only way that you can keep that off balance is literally by doing two things. One, go up tempo. I think if you go up tempo and you keep the team from changing out of their sub defense or changing into their sub defense, whichever the case may be, then you've got them back on their heels already and you're going to have a tendency to move the ball as long as you're making accurate throws. That's number one. Number two, run the ball. Come out of the line of scrimmage, use the place clock, call the play at the line of scrimmage so there's no huddle that can take because the other team doesn't know when you're going to snap it and run the ball.
Yeah.
And clearly if you do that, then they've got to come up and they've got to play the run. Otherwise, you're going to get 4, 5, 6 yards at a crack, and guess what? You're going to move the ball. So when they commit to the run, then what do? Then you find some of that mid-range, 6 to 8 to 10 yard type of the field open. That's where the Patriots want to go. It's not rocket science here, Matt. It really isn't.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to lead into as far as this game in Pittsburgh. Their pass defense is third in the, I believe they're third or fourth in the league in passing yards allowed.
Okay.
And, or I'm sorry, no, they're second. They're second in passing defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was going to say. We need to run the ball. They're 27th in run defense.
Right.
Now, the Steelers are.
So it stands to reason that this team should run the ball on Pittsburgh.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure Belichick knows this and he's going to plan accordingly. But they just need to realize that Brady's won't, especially with his bum hand, you know, he's not going to be throwing 50 times in that game. There is just no way. It's not going to work.
Well, and, I don't know that his hand would allow him to. That's certainly part of it. So because of that, now I'm sure the Steelers are going to prepare for it. I'm sure they're going to think, hey, Patriots are going to run at us. So we need to shore up the middle of the field. You got to be ready to go on both ends. Because remember, this is a game about, this isn't a game about adjustments. This is a game about readjustments. And whichever team readjusts better is the team that usually wins every Sunday.
Yes. And one thing that worries me, you asked earlier if, you know, what worries us about Pittsburgh. They're a desperate team right now. They're last in their division. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more desperate team to face us, you know, before the bye week. They're desperate for a win. They're hungry for a win. They're going to do whatever it takes to start winning games because time's running out for them. So that's one thing that when the Patriots face desperate teams, they usually kind of just, you know, kind of let it go. Oh, you know, we should come away with this win. But in reality, as history has proved, a lot of the desperate teams that go up against the Patriots end up winning. And that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, and it should probably concern you. I totally agree with that assessment. That's why you have to respect everybody, because everybody is capable, especially in this day and age of real parity. You know, in the league, you don't know who's going to come up and bite you any particular week, and anybody can. And Pittsburgh certainly has the cachet where you know they can. Would anybody be surprised, Matt, if Pittsburgh won the game? On the surface, no, they shouldn't be, because Pittsburgh is a traditional power in the league. But if you look at it individually, you see a team that's 2-5, you see a team that's struggled mightily on offense, way more than the Patriots have, and they can't stop, you know, running water on defense. So, you know, and when we heard from Ed Bouchette in the first hour of the program, you know, the writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he says this team has just flat out gotten old. And this is why the Patriots, largely why the Patriots have made the moves that they've made over the last couple of years, somewhat drastic moves, because they saw themselves going the exact same direction that the Steelers are now traveling.
Yep.
It's age, you know, and some of these guys just aren't cutting it anymore. So that's, you know, that's why the Patriots have done. And yeah, we're experiencing growing pains in getting there. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, the Patriots are 6-2 and the Steelers are 2-5. Which one would you rather be, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, and I don't mean to look ahead too far, but as far as Denver goes, I'm wondering if the Patriots will be able to keep up as far as scoring in that game, because I know that's going to be interesting. The Broncos, their defense is better than, you know, than most people give them credit for. Their defense is really good.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm worried even with Amendola. Was Amendola at practice today?
Yes, everybody was there. Everybody was present today. Everybody that was eligible to play was there.
And I'm sure they've proven that they can keep up with high scoring offenses like the Falcons, the Saints, and
the Bengals did hang. Bengals did put 49 up on the Jets this last week.
Oh yeah. So, oh my goodness.
I think the Bengals may be hitting their stride. So Patriots are probably fortunate they caught the Bengals when they did. Now it was still a loss, so it doesn't really matter. But I think now you got to worry about Cincinnati as being a viable playoff contender. And you also need to look at Cincinnati as being your chief competition for a potential bye on down the line, because the Patriots are in position right now with a 2-game lead in the East to certainly command, you know, control of the AFC East over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks. And should they get that, then you've got to start looking at the teams that are ahead of you. Denver's still going to be ahead of you, which makes the head-to-head game against Denver next month huge in playoff breaking. And you have to consider Kansas City, because flat out, Kansas City hasn't lost yet. So that's three teams right now, and if you throw the Patriots in there, that's four teams competing for two spots. Where's the break coming? And the answer to that is, I don't know if it does.
You know, one thing I'm getting tired of, John, is all these, whenever I see a Patriots game or a Broncos game, I always see the comparison between Peyton Manning and Brady. Oh, who is the best quarterback of this era? Well, you know, and they keep comparing the two teams and, you know, and Brady, and I'm so sick of that already.
Well, it's natural, Matt, that they do that because they've been, you know, the two quarterbacks really at the top of the game for an extended number of years. Both are Hall of Famers. Both have won big games. Brady certainly has won a couple of more than Peyton Manning. And Manning he's found the perfect spot. He found a team that believed in him. They found a team that would allow him to get healthy, and they surrounded him with the kind of weapons that they needed to surround him with for him to be effective. Something that the Patriots did not do as effectively this year. And again, it's not entirely Bill Belichick or anybody else's fault because nobody foresaw what happened with Aaron Hernandez. Yep. But for one guy to mean that much, I'm you know, the wide receiver is what really bugs me the most. There should have been somebody that they could have gone out and gotten, that they could have been, you know, a bell cow, so to speak, that, you know, they could rely upon to be somewhat consistent in catching the ball, and they didn't have it. They decided we're going with this two tight end set, and we're going to let the rookies come along and yada yada. And then all of a sudden, the two tight end set blew up because one tight end's not available. And then it's just, so you have to learn how somehow to be flexible, and they haven't been flexible enough.
Yeah.
So they didn't do a good enough job of maintaining that flexibility when they made this team over.
Mm-hmm. And let me run this by you, John. Let me see if you agree with this. I don't think Amendola is the answer.
Based on?
Long term, I think he's a liability because of his health issues.
Well,
he can't stay on the field.
Until he stays on the field, I would give you that, you know, that's a legitimate concern. But, you know, I still think it's a little early to say that he's a bust or that his signing stunk or that he wasn't worth it because, quite frankly, I've seen the hits that he's taken. And frankly, sometimes there's just nothing you can do about that. You got to kind of hand it to the other team and the other guy to make a play. So, I'm not really sold yet on Amendola's inability to stay in there until we see it happen repeatedly. I think that's kind of part of the problem here. So I'm gonna reserve, you know, complete and final judgment on that until maybe we can actually come a little bit closer to that once you get to the off season, and then we can kind of look back at it and say, well, this could have been different or that could have been different. Thanks for the phone call, Matt. We do want to find out a little bit more about what kind of player that the Patriots have obtained in Isaac Sapuoga from the Philadelphia Eagles. Bull Wolf covers the Eagles for Eagles.com, and he joins us here in the playbook. Bo, thanks for taking a couple of minutes. First of all, help me out with the pronunciation, will you?
It's Sapuoga.
So it is
Isaac
soap.
Sapuoga.
Okay, it is soap, like a bar of soap.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, soap.
At least that's what I've been led to believe.
Okay, well, we were kind of told the same thing, and then today I'm hearing everybody say Sapuoga. And I'm like, okay, I thought it was Sapuoga. So never, you know, listen, for someone who's an announcer like myself, these things matter. You understand, right?
I totally understand. And the players in the locker room, I think, I was doing a poll earlier this season asking guys who the strongest player in the locker room was. And he was the resounding answer, but none of the players could get his pronunciation right. It was Sapanga, Sapuoga. They were throwing lots of N's in there, but I do believe it is Sapuoga.
Sapuoga it is, and that's what we're staying with. All right, you mentioned strength, and I think that's a very interesting thing to start with because, you know, clearly the Patriots have lost a guy like Vince Wilfork for the year, and they need someone to come in and be that two-gapper, that guy that's taking on a lot of blockers to allow the playmakers to make plays. Is that what he did with Philadelphia, or at least tried to do?
Yes, and that's the reason they brought him in. You know, this defense was transitioning this offseason from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and they didn't have an in-house nose tackle to fill that position. So they went out in free agency, got Sapuoga, and it was understood, I think, from the beginning that he was sort of a short-term stopgap solution. They ended up drafting a guy in the third round in Benny Logan, who they think can play that position moving forward. So I think that's why that led to the two parting ways. They want to create more playing time for the young guys on the defensive line. There's another rookie named Damian Square who they want to throw in there as well. But that is Isaac's forte for sure. First and second down, playing over the center, and just trying to hold up some blockers so the linebackers can flow to the football.
All right, well, thank you then for the clarification, because we were unsure why, after signing him to a three-year deal in the offseason, getting him from San Francisco, why the Eagles seemed to be so willing to let him go.
Well, yeah, and it is that. I mean, this defense, they had made several free agent acquisitions that were guys who they just needed to fill positions. They needed reliable, dependable bodies. But this is a defense that is young, that is in transition. Sopawaga was one of only two guys on the defense who's over, I think, 28 years of age. And so they want to create more playing time for the guys on defense. Chip Kelly said today that, you know, the young guys on defense, on the defensive line, have been one of the bright spots of the season for the Eagles so far. So Sopawaga, I think, helps the transition, help these guys who were here get used to a new defensive scheme. They all speak, all the guys in the defensive line room speak very highly of Isaac and what he brought to the table leadership-wise. He's also he's definitely a character. In the preseason, I think one of my favorite memories of his brief stay here was it was a preseason game against the Panthers, and in the first snap of the game, Isaac stood up and started doing the motion to Cam Newton with his arm like the kid from the commercial that he was going to come take his spot.
I like that. So, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as he told you guys today, you know, he can throw the football 60 yards. I was asking around the locker room who the emergency kicker would be, and they were saying that he'd be that as well. So he's a jack of all trades, but obviously, for you guys, he's going to be in there at nose tackle. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said he was going to fill right in for Vince Wilfork, but I think, needing a stopgap solution there, I think he should do the trick.
Well, sort of, again, Bo Wolf from Eagles.com joined us here inside the playbook. Now, that kind of leads me into the next question, simply because, you know, if you're giving up, or if the team decided that he was expendable because they wanted to go with the younger guys, and certainly I think we understand that. The Patriots did that mostly in the entire offseason this last year, going with younger guys. Does he still have gas left in the tank?
Well, that's a good question. He played the most snaps he's played in a game this season last week, and whether that was, you know, you want to say the Eagles trying to showcase him or not, he did play a lot. So I think, you know, he's not going to be on the field on third down. He's not going to be on the field in nickel and dime situations. But in run-stopping downs, I think he's still got a little bit left.
Okay, so that's primarily, as we've already identified, that's what they want him there for. The last couple of weeks, the Patriots have given up their most yardage rushing all season long, and not coincidentally, that's, you know, you had Wilfork and Mayo out of the lineup, and Aqib Talib out of the lineup as well, so that's a huge gap right up the middle that's gone from your defense, and they were clearly looking for someone that could kind of plug that hole. What do you feel like, outside of his ability to stop the run, might be his best attribute? Does he have any?
Well, that's a good question. I guess just holding up blockers and letting those linebackers flow to the football. But, I mean, there's no question that he is a player in some decline. He was a big-time player for the Niners for all these past years. But
sure.
Obviously the Eagles wouldn't be giving him up for just moving up from the sixth to the fifth round if he was a superstar player. But I will say, and you've probably mentioned this, that the Patriots got a nice up-close look at Sopawaga during the dual practices
right
here at the NovaCare Complex this summer. So
right.
I think they know what they're getting with Sopawaga.
Seems like they have done their homework. Yeah, we talked about that in the last hour. It's like, you know, sometimes it's really tough to be able to make a judgment on a guy in a training camp situation like that because you're not getting all of the looks that you'd get during the year. But at least they were able to gain some familiarity with him. Like, geez, you know, the big fella in the middle there is doing a pretty good job of, you know, clogging the middle.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know, they also probably get a sense more than you would just on game tape of what kind of personality he is that the defensive line guys sort of rallied around him a little bit. So I think you're getting a good guy in the locker room as well.
Well, and then I think everybody, and I think every team in the NFL needs, you know, good guys in the locker room with some of the stuff that we see happen from week to week. Just a quick question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Eagles' fortunes and the way things seem to have taken a little bit of a dive southward since getting off to such a hot start under Coach Kelly. Has the bloom come off the rose, so to speak?
Well, I think what you've seen is as Chip Kelly has said, something that Patriots fans don't know too well, and that's instability at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Has sort of submarined this team over the past couple weeks. I mean, they've scored 3 points offensively over the last 2 weeks after starting the season the first 6 weeks as one of the best offenses, not only in the league, but in franchise history. So this week it's going to be Nick Foles again, coming off the concussion that kept him out last week. He's going to go out to Oakland and try to get this offense back on track and try to get this running game back on track that was tops in the NFL. LeSean McCoy still leads the league in rushing, but he has been slowed 3 of the past 4 weeks. The good news for the Eagles is the defense has really taken a step forward. The first 4 weeks of the season, they gave up 32 points per game, and over the last 4 weeks, it's dropped down to 18, just over 18. So hopefully they can get things together where both the defense an offense are hitting on all cylinders.
There has been, of course, a lot of attention paid toward, you know, Kelly's Oregon-style offense and having the early success and then basically being stagnant. Why has it failed? Have teams caught up to it, or has it been the injury problems?
You know, I really think it's just execution. You look at the game tape, and 2 weeks ago against the Cowboys, last week against the Giants, there are receivers open all over the field, and quarterbacks are just unable to find them. Nick Foles talked today about his game 2 weeks ago against the Cowboys. It was like an out-of-body experience. He said he's never been unable to connect with receivers like that in his life. He was, 18 of 32, way less than that, actually. But, he completed all these check-down passes for only 80 yards. But the running game, I think, the inability of the passing game has caused opposing defenses to put 8, sometimes 9 guys in the box, and that's slowed down LeSean McCoy a little bit. So I think what Nick Foles and the offense need to do on Sunday against the Raiders is maybe hit a few deep pass plays, get the box back a little bit, and then get back to what this team does best, and that's running the football.
All right. Good stuff, Bo. Hey, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us today. Sure appreciate it.
No problem. Enjoy soap.
Thanks. We'll give that a shot. Bo Wolf, again, covers the Eagles for Eagles.com, and it's Isaac Sopawaga. That's definitely the official pronunciation. Number two, as we suspected, he is here to be a first and second down guy, run stuffer, if not stopper, plug the hole, occupy blockers, and allow the playmakers to make plays. And that, yes, is exactly what Vince Wilfork's role was, although Vince probably did a little bit more penetrating into an opponent's backfield. But you're basically trying to find somebody who can take over Wilfork's role for Wilfork. He also has 2 years left on his contract. Now, I don't want to say, you know, he's going to come in and replace Vince, because I think there's every expectation that Wilfork will return from his Achilles injury and be back on the field next year. But think about it this way. If Wilfork comes back and you have Soap as a guy in the rotation, and you've gotten this, you know, tremendous start from the two rookies in Villano and Chris Jones, and what if Tommy Kelly is able to come back and provide, you know, some extra strength there or depth? Then goodness, now you're talking about having some tackles that can play the game. And it doesn't matter who's in the lineup in any particular stretch. You can rotate these guys in and out. Nobody gets beat up too badly, and everybody's effective because everybody has shown, all of the guys that I just mentioned, everybody has shown that they can make plays because they have. Now, that actually gets me a little bit excited, okay? That's actually cause for some optimism on the defensive front right there. He's coming in to do a specific job. You're not asking him to rush the passer, although if he gets to the passer, then that's a bonus. You're not asking him really to lead the team in tackles, which is why, so we had some emailers earlier suggest, well, he's only 37th against the run. Mule muffins. You don't need him to be anything against the run. You need him to occupy blockers. There's a huge difference here. So, did I just give a MASH reference? I think I did. You remember Colonel Potter from MASH? Is that too, or is that over your head, Kev? I think that's over your head. You don't remember the MASH TV series.
I remember.
All right. Well, you remember Colonel Sherman Potter?
Yeah, I just couldn't. I remember looking for the drop, and I just couldn't find it without the music
couldn't find
in the background.
It? Yeah, okay. That was one of his best. That was one of my favorite sayings that had on
the
TV show.
Instead of
saying, you know, horse bleep or bull bleep, mule muffins.
Yeah, that was a favorite show of mine growing up as
nice.
A kid that didn't have cable. It was always on these standard channels.
Really? So you didn't have cable growing up either?
No, I never had cable until I went to college at the age of 18.
Come on! Why not? Your parents didn't believe in it?
No, it wasn't that they didn't believe in it, but they knew how, you know, ill I was with sports at a very young age, and they didn't want to encourage, you know, couch potatoism.
And here you are working for an NFL
team.
So
their fear was, all right, if we get him Nessun, and remember the old sports channel before
sure.
Tom, you know,
yeah,
if we get him Nessun,
right.
sports channel, and all
right.
that stuff, he's going to be watching the Celtics, Bruins, and Reds, you know.
All the time.
Every night,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And he's not going to be doing his homework. He's not going to go out and play and do all the stuff that normal kids do. And they're probably right. My treat was, in my youth, on a Friday night, being the dork I was while other kids were out going to the movies with girls and doing this, that, and the other thing in middle school, I would sit in, and once a week, the Red Sox would be on UPN 38.
Mm-hmm.
It would be Sean McDonough and Bob Montgomery before Remy.
Right.
And my treat was a large cheese pizza a 2-liter bottle of Coca-Cola and the Red Sox on Friday night.
Nice.
That was my treat.
Nice.
And
nice.
It made me appreciate, I guess, being able to watch games a lot more, but it also gave me a passion for radio because I was the kid up in his bedroom with the radio under the covers so mom and dad wouldn't hear, listening to the Red Sox, listening to the Bruins, listening to the Celtics. And I think that's where my passion for radio and for sports kind of really started to okay. cultivate, because I could never, you know, I could never watch the games. So I relied on people like yourself to paint the picture for me as a kid under his covers, you know, hanging on every pitch, hanging on every whistle. So that's why when I met you for the first time, and I told you how much I had listened to you when I was a kid, you know, with BC football, which is another team of mine.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate the radio play-by-play guys because that's what I grew up with. You know,
So you grew up listening to the radio like I grew up listening
exactly,
to the radio.
I very much grew up in a lot of respects like people did in the 1950s and 60s, like my dad did. You know, there weren't a ton of TVs weren't as bountiful as they are, obviously, these days, where some homes have 10 TVs in them. And they would all gather around the radio and listen to, you know, programs and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I wasn't quite, you know, that way. But in order to get my information and keep up with the teams and listen to all the games, I had no other choice because this was before the internet, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just me, my room right next to my parents, and the walls in the house were really thin. So I'd have to muffle the radio underneath the covers just enough so I could hear it, but they couldn't hear it through the other room. And every once in a while, I'd get careless, and I'd yell or I'd clap after a big play, and I'd get through the wall, bang, 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 "Kevin Russell, you put that radio away!" from my mom. So that's all it was. It was a miserable existence until I was, like, 19 years old. I went to UMass, and I got, like, 50 channels, which isn't even a lot by standard. And I was like, holy crap.
Look at all this stuff.
It was amazing. I was like, I can watch the Red Sox every day. It's phenomenal.
It's amazing you got through school. You're glued in front of the television.
Yeah, almost
the time.
Didn't make it.
Well, at least you did. That's the main thing. Oh, good stuff, Kev. Nice story. You might have a future in storytelling. You never know. Some email here to finish up the program. Chris sends this in, says, when Vereen comes back, can we see Bolden return kicks with Washington if both are healthy? Well, what would Vereen's coming back have to do with Bolden returning kicks would be my answer to that. I mean, if you're going to have Vereen return kicks, then put Vereen back there. His coming back shouldn't have anything to do with whether or not Bolden is back there returning kicks. He's been back there returning kicks from time to time, but they seem to like Blunt back there for whatever reason, because I think they feel like Blunt will take care of the ball. Problem is, you're not getting any field position. You're always at about the 18 to the 20-yard line. And I think you need to do something to give yourself, you know, field position at, the, you know, 25-plus. I don't know. I mean, I realize why he's probably not back there, but because he's returning punts all the time, why don't you switch it up a little bit and let Julian Edelman return kicks? Because he certainly seems capable. I don't know. I'm sure they have guys that can take care of charting those kind of plays on the sideline, you know, so let's rotate him and Amendola and whoever else has got some speed to give us some real field position to start a drive. Washington is healthy. Yes, he's got to be there because he's there. That's the only reason that they haven't cut his butt off the roster right now, is because they see him coming back and being that guy. That's why they took him, you know, and got him, you know, from the Jets in the offseason anyway. And he's been hurt the whole time. And because he's really a one-dimensional player, I mean, I guess he could be in the backfield and he could fulfill that Vereen role in terms of, you know, taking screen passes and the like, but he hadn't been healthy. So if he can't return kicks, he can't, you know, catch balls out of the backfield, why is he still on the team? So Washington's got to be the guy. That's what I'm thinking. Let's see, what else we have here? Mark in Saskatchewan says, glad to see we are 6-2. Everyone else lost in the division last week. Tough first half, but a solid second half, and I think they'll start to roll this week on offense. And if Tlaib comes back and all these guys stay healthy, I think they will start to look like the old Pats on offense with a solid D. As well, I think Dobson is turning a corner, and Gronk will be Gronk this week, and with all the guys on the field, should open up more field for the receivers. Excuse me. You know, Mark, I tend to agree with you, but I think you can't expect, as I said earlier, I don't think you can expect Gronk to be Gronk right away, and he clearly hasn't shown that the first couple of weeks, which also goes for Vereen and Washington and Amendola, anybody else that comes back. You can't expect them to pick right up where they left off when they went out. There has to be some kind of a, There has to be some kind of a period of adjustment, for lack of a better phrase. And actually, that is what I'm looking for, phrase-wise. It has to be a period of adjustment. And the problem is that Brady has been accurate to the point where he hasn't really allowed these guys to adjust too much. They've had to adjust on the fly, and it's sort of, and to me, it's kind of stunted their growth a little bit. So it's not a perfect science, but you are correct. The guys are beginning to come back. Short of obviously Will Fork and Mayo, they're not. They're on injured reserve. They're gone. Vollmer is also on injured reserve, so he's gone for the year. Vereen was the IR with a chance to return. He started practicing today, and we'll see if he comes back after next week. Obviously, he will not be back this week. They'll give him, he's eligible after 8 weeks. This is week 9, so he could come back. My guess is, unless for some reason or another he's completely healthy, and I guess we'll find out on the injury report that will come out in a little more than 5 minutes from now, but depending on where they have him listed on the report, my guess would be doubtful. It's conceivable he could play. I think common sense dictates, well, why would you throw him out there when he's got another week off coming up? Why not hold him for 2 weeks, and then that gives him 2 more weeks to be healthier? And in a season when you really need healthy, much less healthier, then it seems to benefit you a little bit more, does it not? We'll find out. Dave in Lancaster, California. Do you think Tom Brady still remembers the comments that Ryan Clark made about him seeing ghosts? Do you think Brady will try to burn Clark with Dobson and Gronkowski? Well, I don't think he takes anything personally, because I think that's one of the reasons why he's been as good as he has been for a number of years. It might be a comment that would stay with him. It might be, something that he'll say, hey, I'm going to send this one your way. I mean, who knows? But I really don't think the guys can, I don't think they can spend a lot of time thinking about what other guys say. Now, if a guy's going to go, shoot his mouth off, for instance, Roethlisberger almost did that today when we had Ed Bouchette from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the opening hour. And the one thing that we did ask him was is that he had tweeted about 30 minutes before he came on the air that Ben Roethlisberger said today after practice for the Steelers that this was a must-win game for Pittsburgh. And then he couched it by saying, well, they're all must-win. So he sort of deflected the obvious criticism and deflected the potential bulletin board statement that would go up down the hallway here that, okay, this is must-win. We got to win it. It didn't quite go that whole way, but you sense, though, that this is obviously a huge, it's still a huge game. The Steeler players at 2-5 feel like that they are still in the mix. They're 3 games out of the lead, or they're 3 games behind Cincinnati in the division. You've got 8 games left to play. Actually, for them, they've got 9 games because they've already had their bye week. So they've played 7. They've got 9 left. They're 3 back. You do the math. Is it must win? Not yet, but it's pretty close. Vivek from Markham, just north of Toronto, he says, I tuned in late, but I believe great minds think alike. I also guessed the right game score, as did a few people. I presume you'll need my mailing address. So here you go. That's the other, one of the other ones we were looking for, Kev. He says, to be honest, I don't even know what I won. Well, at least he remembered. He thinks Brady's bunch will step up and Brady will just carve up the Steelers' defense. Troy Polamalu is slower than before, but he still has the same instincts. Steelers' receivers stink, though, as does the O-line. Mike Williams was only average when he was there. Since they didn't scout new wide receivers, they promoted Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. Remember Sanders? I'm sure most Patriots fans do. That's the guy the Patriots signed to an offer sheet last year, and the Steelers matched it. I was wondering at the trade deadline whether or not a guy like Sanders might be made available if the Steelers decided that they weren't in it and they were out of it. Clearly, they don't think they're out of it. Otherwise, I would have thought that Sanders' name might have come up. Anyway, Vivek says they can't carry the passing offense. I think Le'Veon Bell is great, will be formidable to stop in the rush, although he's been banged up, and that's part of the reason why they've had a poor running game. But doesn't mean if he gets ahead of steam, he won't be good, because he was very good at Michigan State. I suspect the run game will be very similar to the run game the Pats faced against the Bengals with Giovanni Bernard, so expect a very dynamic run game. All right, pretty good, Vivek. Appreciate that. Thank you for sending in. Yes, you do need to send that in. And Kevin now has your info, and so we'll get the yearbook out to you. Did we have anybody else left? Luis in Tampa says, John, I have a quick question. How does do the Patriots have to activate wide receiver Mark Harrison? I see this guy's highlights. I know it's college, but with his size and speed, I can't see why he couldn't help a bad offense. My thoughts are, use this guy at tight end wideout like Hernandez, like an H-back. Well, first of all, I believe this may be the last week, if I'm not mistaken, because I'd kind of lost track of Harrison, but he's in the same boat as Armin Armstead. So I think you had 6 weeks, so 7, 8, so this would be 9. So I think this is the week where they've, you know, got to, you know, do whatever or get off the pot with both Armstead and Harrison, if I've got the rules correct. So I'm assuming by the end of the week or this weekend, we'll hear something one way or the other. I'm not sure what role that they actually portray him in, Luis, because I just haven't seen enough of him to be able to give you an accurate assessment on that. So I'm not going to guess, because anybody's guess right now is as good as anyone else's. Canadian Mike in Florida says there's really no documented reason why they use... I think this was intended for the other guys, because I'm not sure I understand the overall meaning of the email. Jacob from Denmark. When is Vereen eligible to play? How much better will the offense be with him on the field? He's eligible to play, Jacob, or Jakob. He's eligible to play this week. 8 weeks. I believe at the 8 week mark. So I think he's actually eligible this week, but the guess is that he won't, because he'll have the bye week next week to continue getting healthier, as I suggested earlier. And again, it's just a supposition. I suppose he could technically play. He has returned to practice. And that was the big news of the day from Eric Scalavino today. Everybody was at practice today. They even had a plus one. So, you know, with Sopoaga, Tlaib, everybody was there. The only two guys that weren't playing, or the three guys that weren't playing, were the three guys that had been put on IR for the entire year. Wilfork, Mayo, Vollmer. Those guys are gone. Everybody else is out there. Everybody else is practicing. Everybody else was available. And that's the first time you've really been able to say that, probably since week one. And even then, you didn't have Gronk. So you still got injured players, but everybody who's eligible to practice, practiced. And that is definitely a step in the right direction for these Patriots. All right, our thanks to Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and Bo Wolf from PhiladelphiaEagles.com for joining us in the program today to give us some insight not only on the Steelers, this Sunday's opponent, but also the newest arrival in Isaac Sopoaga at defensive tackle for the Patriots, coming in the trade yesterday just before the deadline with the Eagles. So we've got some newcomers in. We've got some oldcomers who are back out there in practice. Are things looking up in your estimation? Maybe. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. E. Scal will rejoin us, as he always does, on Wednesdays and Thursdays from Patriot Football Weekly. Also tomorrow, Jim Nance, CBS Sports, scheduled to join us in the playbook. We'll talk Patriots, Steelers with Jim Nance, and the one and only guru, Russell Baxter, in the playbook all on Thursday's show. It's must listen to radio right here on Patriots.com. Appointment listening, kids. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.